National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to a $500,000 cash infusion. Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Washington Board of Trade. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Joe Applebaum, Potomac Companies, Jennifer Wappas, Pagnotto Carp, and Douglas Whiteglass Jacobson. We have a great lineup of guests joining our show today, including Bruce Kaufman, President and CEO of Human Circuit, John Matteo, President of Jackson & Campbell, Doug Bregman, President Bregman, Berbert, Schwartz, and Gilday, and John Haas, who is the CEO of Rosetta Stone. Let's get to know our first guest, Bruce Kaufman, President and CEO of Human Circuit. Bruce, what is Human Circuit? What are you guys doing?
So Human Circuit is a technology design build firm working with enterprise video, meeting spaces, broadcast facilities, anything touching audio, video, data, or control.
How old is this firm?
The company turns 51 this November.
And didn't you mention to us that this was a family business where your dad was involved or something like that? What was that story?
Absolutely. So there were originally three partners in a consumer hi-fi audio business. He started the broadcast and professional group a couple years in and became Professional Products.
Interesting. So this was a business that was very early on in technology. But technology changes. Did the how large or how small was this organization at its peak?
Well, at its peak, we were probably 103 employees and $57
million. So this is interesting. You got 103 employees in a business that's really technology sensitive, and with technology changing all the time, did you have to at some point in time shift that organization and change the organization around or downsize it or upsize it?
Absolutely. We recognized after a while that the cost of technology was dropping dramatically. It was more readily available. The consumer side had a great effect on it, so we had to downsize and gain our agility back over time.
Well, let me ask you a question. Did that changing and being more agile have anything to do with when you happened to step in and give your dad a hand? Was that about the same time?
We came a little bit after it. It was a number of years after I joined the organization. I've been in it 23 years. It was probably about halfway through that period of time where we started to recognize that.
So was Dad happy to give you the reins?
Oh, he was very happy to hand the reins at that point. I had to make the hard decisions on a few things, and he got to sit in the background. So, yeah, he was active in it, but I was the front man for it.
Interesting. So I'm trying to figure out what prepared you to make these hard decisions. Where were you from originally?
Fourth generation Washingtonian, one of the few.
How young were you when you started making money, and what was it you were doing?
Oh, boy. So first time making money was, well, actually, as a small child, I checked every single phone booth for dimes left behind. So that's where I first started making money. But the next one was reselling magazines with a friend of mine that we used to buy at used magazine shop. And,
we had sell them again.
Steady clientele of male clients or friends who wanted to buy these magazines.
I get it. Yeah. You understood the market.
Absolutely.
You're sensitive to the markets. And didn't you tell me that you also did some manual labor or something like that?
I did a number of jobs, including packing shrimp, scrubbing toilets as a janitor, scrubbing floors,
etc. So what did you or didn't you like? It sounds to me like you got this creative streak buying and selling magazines. But what did you or didn't you like about being a janitor and packing shrimp?
Well, and a day laborer. I found out I slept really well doing that work, but that was the only benefit as far as I was concerned.
So you really didn't like those
jobs. So I wanted to use my mind more than my hands. No, not my favorite.
But it's interesting. So you're running a business where everything's changing all the time, and you've had to make some very difficult decisions regarding upsizing or downsizing the organization and what technologies to integrate. It's like everything's always changing. Isn't that like scary and frightening as opposed to taking a safe job?
It's extremely frightening. You should have seen what I looked like before I started this job. So, yeah, it's a constant thing in motion. That's part of the challenge also. There's a good part to that. It's not just fear, but fear is a good motivator, and we're constantly on the move.
Well, I mean, the thing is, if you had a normal 9-to-5 job, you'd be able, you would know exactly how much money you're making. You would know what hours you had to work. You'd be able to, I mean, right now, do you ever have to work on the weekends?
Work is fairly constant. I try not to have some semblance of family life. I try and segment it, and I'm pretty good at it, but sure, weekend work occurs.
What time do you start doing emails in the morning? What time do you finish thinking about the business at night?
Foolishly, as soon as I get up to take the dog outside, I've grabbed my phone, and I'm looking to see what the emails are.
So you're like preoccupied by this business. I mean, you got to be
pretty
on
much.
Top of stuff all the time.
Absolutely.
Doug, what kind of questions you got? What do you think?
What's driving you?
What drives me is just success in general. I like having a group of people to see them succeed as well. It's always been a family feel business, and as much as we've had to change sort of the rules and made it more performance based and less loyalty based, it's still about succeeding as a group, and it's moving on to that next level. And I feel like I need to achieve something. There's a personal achievement that needs to go along with it.
Right. So it is a family business, and it's, so it sounds like you're close to your employees, like most are. But you've gone from 100-plus employees down to 28. So how did you, and particularly your father, take that?
Well, I'll tell you what, probably the worst day of my entire life was when we had to downsize. We were in the mid-50s at that point, and the recession hit. And we knew we had to downsize even further. And we had to let 12 employees go that had done nothing wrong. And that was probably presenting to my team that day. Where I broke down was probably the worst moment of my life, minus personal, you know, family deaths, that kind of thing.
Why, what was so terrible about it? It wasn't you.
It was not. Well, that's not exactly true. I have a sign on my desk. I stole the idea from Rudy Giuliani. It says I'm responsible. So I take everything very, very personally. Obviously, I had not done enough, in my feeling, that to keep the business where it could be sized the way it was.
Yeah, but the market changed. The business, you know,
absolutely.
There weren't the customers there. What else could you have done? What do you feel is so personally responsible for?
I come from a Jewish guilt complex. What am I going to do?
I understand. So, yeah, Jen, absolutely. What questions do you got?
What makes you take that responsibility when you, I mean, was it something when you were younger? Do you remember having, like, an incident or something?
No, I don't think it was a single incident. I mean, I watched my father deal with a number of different business transactions over time where he had partners that may not have taken, and this is not the main business and side businesses and other transactions, that did not take as much responsibility as he did when things did not work out. And he took everything very personally and took responsibility for it, down to paying the last dime, even if he could have used clauses and legalities to get out of it. And so that extra sense of responsibility sort of put itself onto me, and I follow the same thing. I take responsibility whether it's my problem or not.
Wait. So you're telling me that there's times you've had in business where you could have not paid a vendor or fired, but you don't believe in taking shortcuts in business?
Absolutely not. I do not believe in those shortcuts. I don't believe in those processes.
But I thought the game with business was to make a lot of money, and you do whatever you got to do to make a lot of money. Or maybe I'm mistaken.
No, the game with business is to satisfy the whole and not the part.
What do you mean to satisfy the whole and not the part? I'm not sure I understand.
If I'm in business and I'm going to sell something to somebody or a system or help somebody out, I'm doing it to satisfy them, but I'm also hoping to satisfy both myself and the team around me.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that the name of the game is not take as much as I can, but to try to keep everybody happy all the time?
That would be the goal. I'm not telling you it works 100% of the time, but that would be the goal, in my opinion.
Oh, okay. I'm learning something here. Doug, what else are you thinking?
So how does that responsibility and that attitude translate to your client service?
I think the way it translates is there's a very personal relationship, especially between the way our support is done, is the engineering group that designs it supports it. We do not hand it off to a third party. We don't have just field service people. So the relationship between the client and our engineer specifically grows over time, as does anybody else that works on that support team. So it is a very one-to-one kind of relationship. We only have 28 people. You're going to get to know everybody across the board, even down to the accounting team, to the warehouse people. So there's usually sort of an identification between our clients and most of our team. They usually know most of our team.
Jen, what do you think of?
It sounds like your dad was a mentor for you. What made you want to work for him?
that was not the intent originally. There was no nepotism clause in the business. Every once in a while, when somebody's child was out of work, they got work there. So that got broken after a while, and one wing of the business talked my father into hiring me, and I was disenchanted with what I was doing, which was actually on the production side of things. I never wanted to go into sales. They talked me into it. Somehow it clicked, and that's where I ended up.
What clicked? What are you talking about?
Sales, which I thought was the worst profession on the planet until I was fully in it. And then I started to understand. I once did door-to-door newspaper sales as a kid. Possibly the worst. Worse, actually, than cleaning up floors and toilets.
But what was it about sales in this business that shifted you? What changed your mind?
The personal relationships. I got in at a time, luckily, where you were still dealing with the end users and not contracting procurement. And so those relationships that you built over time where they're saying, here's my problem, and I'm saying I'm able to fix it. There's something feels really, really good about that. And luckily, I was able to cut my teeth under that.
So you think the different. So you don't see sales as selling. You see sales as a relationship?
Sales has changed a little bit. I won't hold that completely now, but yeah, I see sales as being should be a mutual beneficial relationship. It's not about just selling an object or selling something. You have a reason to sell it, and they should have a reason to buy it.
Wait a minute. When I have a problem with something and I call and I get the help desk, you know, usually there's a whole tree that I've got to go through, which is pretty frustrating. But you're telling me if I'm one of your customers, I'm talking to people and I know a lot of different people in the organization.
You're buying from the wrong guys. Yeah, absolutely.
Huh. So you're really all about customer service.
Absolutely. Not a mutual fit, we should not be doing business together.
So you make a pretty significant investment in keeping the client.
I do, but I also fire clients as well. It's very important that we're a mutual fit, and sometimes you're not, and that's okay. So you part company.
Interesting. Well, what's the website address of this organization known as Human Circuit?
Very simply, humancircuit.com.
HumanCircuit.com. We've been speaking with Bruce Kaufman, President and CEO of Human Circuit, here on Executive Leaders Radio with my co-hosts, Joe Applebaum, Potomac Companies, Jennifer Wappas, Pagnotto Carp, and Doug White, Glass Jacobson. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. It's executiveleadersradio.com. Back in a moment, right after this business break. Nice interview.
Thank you.
And your name is?
Francisca Alonso.
And the name of the organization?
It's AV Architects Plus Builders.
Uh-huh. Francisco, where are you from originally?
I was born in Chile, but raised in Spain.
Uh-huh. And what do you do for a living?
I co-founded a residential architecture firm in 2001. I'm also a mother of four kids.
Uh-huh. So you founded an architectural firm. And what's special about this architectural firm?
We're an architect-led design-build company, so we build luxury homes all the way from design to construction.
And how do you know what your clients are looking for? What are you trying to do there? How do you get a sense of that?
After being here for 30 years, I realized that everyone works long, long hours, and they would love to come home to a retreat-like home. So we build homes that make you feel like you're on vacation all year round, not just 2 weeks of the year.
And this is influenced by your coming from Spain, huh?
Yes, the Mediterranean lifestyle, upbringing in Marbella, the mm-hmm. southern coast of Spain, really has taught me to enjoy life every day. And part mm-hmm. of how you live at home has a huge impact on your happiness. So we like to help our clients make that dream come true
so
for
you're
them.
Not just, you're not just sitting and listening to what your clients are looking for. You're making suggestions. You're able to help influence and guide them regarding how it's going to feel.
Absolutely. I think every day matters, and all the time that you spend at home mm-hmm. matters immensely, especially if
What's
you work
What's the website address for this organization?
It's AV Architects Plus Builders, and we're in Great Falls,
Let me
Virginia.
Have that one more time, please.
AV Architects Plus Builders.
.com. Mm-hmm. And
oh, I'm
this has
sorry,
been your
though.
Business spotlight. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
If you're over the age of 50 and considering buying an annuity in the next 60 days, I have some important news for you. Don't buy an annuity until you understand the pros and cons of annuities. A free book to help you maximize your retirement income from television host and three-time author Josh Melberg has been released. This book reveals little-known truths about annuity strategies in simple-to-understand terms. Grab a pen right now, because we are about to offer you this free book that unlocks the five little-known secrets we believe baby boomers and seniors should know before buying an annuity. Call 800-935-0752 now, and you'll receive a free copy of Josh Melberg's book, Next Gen Annuity Strategies Revealed. As a bonus, we'll also send you a copy of The Number One Mistakes Retirees Are Making With Their Investments Today, and a free DVD on how you can get up to 33% more income in retirement. Call 800-935-0752. That's 800-935-0752. Employees of J.D. Melberg Financial have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Joe Applebaum, Potomac Companies, Jennifer Wopis, Pagnetto Carp, and Doug Whiteglass. Jacobson, like to introduce John Matteo, president of Jackson & Campbell. John, what's Jackson & Campbell? What are you guys doing?
We are a general civil practice law firm based in D.C.
What do you mean, general? I don't understand what you're talking about.
We do litigation, trial work, business, real estate, trust and estates law, among others.
How large or how small is this organization?
We have 45 lawyers and approximately 80 employees.
Where are you from originally?
Connecticut.
How many brothers and sisters?
Two brothers and a sister.
Where are you in the pecking order?
The third of four, in between two boys.
And you mentioned earlier that you grew up living with your grandparents.
Grandmother. My grandfather was deceased.
Uh-huh. So what, did your grandmother have an influence on you? Where was your grandmother from?
She was from Italy.
Uh-huh. What kind of influence did she have on you?
A lot. I spent every night with her in her part of the house, and she pushed a lot about all of us to go to school, to be educated.
What did she do to you?
Instilled in me a sense of family, the importance of it.
What are you talking about?
That was a big part of
her
life. This
is your grandmother. You hanging out with your grandmother?
She was a tough lady and controlled our family like a CEO controls a company.
I see you smiling. You really have an affection. You have quite an affection for your grandmother, don't you? What did you learn from her?
Again, the importance of family, being there for each other, being a support system. Also, the importance of moving up in the world and getting educated and getting a better life for ourselves like they did coming here.
Where was your grandmother from?
From Italy.
So you learned about family. I mean, it's evident you learned it. I mean, you wanted to hang out with your grandma. Your mom's grandmom's talking to you about family. She knows how to run things and organize things. She did a pretty good job with her family, it sounds like. And I'm trying to figure out, what was the effect of your grandmother on your building this law firm called Jackson & Campbell?
Well, the firm goes back 130 years. I've been with the firm 22 years, so one of many leaders of the firm. But I think it's the interpersonal relationships with our staff, the other attorneys, as well as with our clients.
You hear about businesses and law firms like being run like families and stuff. Is there any similarity between a family and the way you run this law firm?
Definitely with Italian families, because there's always going to be conflict resolution. It's difficult sometimes, I think, in law firms, too, because you're managing other leaders who are used to being in charge and being leaders. As well as just the challenges of any business.
And your grandmother prepared you for that? Your grandmother prepared you to manage conflict?
Yes, I think so.
Like, give me an example of an experience you had.
Well, they had a family business, and she spoke often of how important it was to trust the people who are working for you and making sure they trust you.
Wow, I thought business was all about suing people and all that other kinds of stuff. You're talking about the major way your grandmother influenced your building this business, this law firm, is because of trust. That's fascinating. Doug, what are you picking up?
Your family that you grew up really grounded you. So how does that affect you?
I think I have a good sense of self and a good, healthy, relationship-oriented personality where I enjoy speaking with people. I enjoy actually solving conflicts.
Did you work? You mentioned earlier that your uncle was a pharmacist and you started working in his store when you were 14.
Yes.
What did you learn from that experience that you use nowadays? How did that experience develop you?
Again, I think it was part of it was people. It was a small town, and I dealt with a lot of the customers that came into the store and helped him out. And he was the only one of that generation who went to college.
Yeah.
So he, again, instilled the importance of education and how that, you know, moved him along in life and helped him. So that was a very important influence as well.
Interesting. Jen?
What were you interested in as a child or a young adult? What were you? Did you have any hobbies, play any sports?
I was anything but sports. I was the black sheep of my family that only did sports. I did like to swim. I was a big, I was lifeguard at one point. And I also was really engaged in politics, loved politics.
Doug, didn't you have some thoughts about politics and stuff?
Yeah, yeah, so politics at a very young age just seems out of character for a child. Why was that?
It just was my interest. I always liked government. That was always one of my favorite things to study. I was involved in student government in school, and it was something that our family always discussed around the dinner table and big Italian family dinners on Sunday where everyone was discussing arguing politics, and so it was just always an interest of mine.
Well, how did that prepare you for practice of law?
I think every business is politics. You know, you have to just manage different expectations, manage different interests, manage different opinions, and reach a common consensus for the good of the organization.
Earlier, you mentioned it was interesting. You mentioned something to the effect of, you know, you have a good self-esteem or something like that. I'm trying to figure out. I'm not sure exactly what context that came up in, but what's interesting to me is what's that have to do with the practice of law?
Well, I think you need to be a very confident person to be a lawyer because your clients look to you for the answers at some of the most troubled times of their lives or their businesses, and they're looking to you to help them.
Did that happen when you were working in the pharmacy as a kid? People would come in and you'd like take them under your wing?
Not really, because I was so young. It wasn't really in that
uh-huh.
setting.
Did you see that happen with your uncle?
Yes.
What?
Well, I think, he trusted me.
Uh-huh.
He knew that he can rely on me. We always had to be there, those of us in the family who worked for him, whenever the few times he wasn't there for his rotary meeting or whatever. And he trusted us because he had a temporary person in the pharmacy part.
You didn't steal candy or money out of the register and stuff like that?
No, never. Never.
Why?
The way we were raised.
What are you talking about?
I think it would have really been a shameful thing in our family if that was found out, or it just wasn't the right thing to do.
What are you talking about, the right thing to do? Nobody would have known.
We came from a very strong Catholic family, too.
Uh-huh. How's that affect your practice of law?
Well, I hope every lawyer can answer it this way, but certainly for me is that I'm an honest person.
Mm-hmm. How's that affect your building the team and the staff?
I think that my staff knows that if I say something, it's true, even if it's a tough decision, that what they're hearing from me is, in fact, the truth.
So you're an old-fashioned kind of guy. When you shake somebody's hand, that's the deal. You stand
yes.
behind it.
Yes.
Even if it doesn't necessarily work to your betterment.
I think that's a correct statement.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Have you ever had a client that you didn't want to work with and you turned down because
yeah. you... Yes.
Why was that?
It hasn't happened that often, mm-hmm. but on the one or two occasions, it actually goes back to this honesty. They weren't honest with me. You can't help a client that's not telling you all the facts or the truth.
I thought the whole thing is like when you represent a client, it's attorney-client privilege. You don't have to really tell the whatever. You know, you're trying to manifest things the best to the client, and it doesn't really matter if they're telling you the truth or not.
That I would disagree with that statement, because without knowing that, you can't help them. It is privilege, and that's the beauty of that mm-hmm. Rule is that they can tell you anything without it being exposed.
So you really, this thing about trust goes back to your grandmother, huh?
And my dad and mom.
Well, and what'd your dad do for a living?
My dad was a barber, among other jobs.
Uh-huh. Did you ever go to the barber shop when he was cutting hair?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. What was that experience like?
Maybe a RFD with a bunch of guys hanging around and talking politics.
Uh-huh. What'd you learn from that? How did that influence you? How did that experience influence you, that working in a barber shop?
I think my dad's a real people person, and I inherited that from him.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. What's the website address for this organization?
JacksCamp.com.
We've been speaking with John Matteo, president of Jackson & Campbell, here on Executive Leaders Radio.
Hurricane Harvey brought terrible destruction, but it also brought out the best in humanity.
As former presidents, we wanted to help our fellow Americans begin to recover.
Our friends in Texas, including Presidents Bush, 41 and 43, are doing just that.
People are hurting down here, but as one Texan put it, we've got more love in Texas than water.
We love you, Texas.
Donate to OneAmericaAppeal.org. We are all in this together.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have you heard about BizTV? BizTV is the home for America's entrepreneurs, small businesses, and those who want to succeed in life. It's the only national television network committed to airing original, high-quality, educational, and inspirational programming about real business people. BizTV can provide the right kind of ideas, motivation, and education to help fuel the next generation of business owners. Visit BizTV.com and call your satellite or cable service provider to request BizTV.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370, 800-605-5370, call 800-605-5370.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630. Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off. Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing ASAP. We're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we'll give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, call Page Publishing now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call.
888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. That's 888-785-0618.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, and we'd like to introduce Doug Bregman, president of Bregman, Berbert, Schwartz, and Gilday. What is Bregman, Berbert, Schwartz, and Gilday? What are you guys doing?
We are a law firm that has a civil practice. We do work in areas such as real estate, business law, wills and estates, employment law, litigation.
How large or how small is this firm?
We have 25 lawyers.
All right. Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
How many brothers and sisters?
I have an older brother and two younger sisters.
All right. Who had the greater effect on you, your older brother or your two younger sisters?
They all had an effect on me. I would say the one with the most effect is my older brother.
And let me ask you this. What kind of sports did you play as a kid?
I played every sport. I love sports.
What kind of sports?
I played basketball, baseball, football. I was on the crew team.
All right. In basketball, what was your role?
My role was as a point guard. It's something that people don't do too much of these days. My job was to bring up the ball, call the plays, pass the ball in, and make sure the team gelled around trying to score.
In baseball, what was your role?
I was a pitcher.
What's the common thread between basketball, your role is in basketball, your role in baseball, and your role in this firm as president of Bregman, Berbert, Schwartz, and Gilday?
It's a good question. I think probably one of the common features is as a leader, as somebody who brings everybody together and gets them to work towards a common goal.
I thought the leader was dominating and tells people what to do, and if they don't do it, like, get out of here.
I'm definitely not a dominating type of leader. I like to lead by example. I like to work hard, do my part, and hopefully people follow the lead and do the right thing based on what they're seeing me do.
How about that? Okay, that's cool. Doug, what are you picking up?
Yeah, Doug, you talked about at a very early age working in the family store, working your dad's store. How did that experience help to shape you to where you are?
That was an amazingly formative part of my life, working with my dad in the store. Sometimes I worked there every day, after school and on weekends.
What were you doing at that store?
I did everything. I started probably, I was 6 years old, working the candy counter, making sure all the candies were in the right place. And when people would come in and mess up the candies, I'd put them in where they needed to be.
Hold on for 1 second. Did your dad tell you to put the candies back where they were supposed to be, or did you just naturally do that?
That was a natural thing.
What, to keep things organized?
To keep things organized. I took my job very seriously. It was a big responsibility. I was a young kid. And I felt important putting all those candies where they needed to be.
So how does that have anything to do with what you're doing nowadays, running this law firm, keeping things organized, feeling responsible? What's the parallel there?
I never thought of it, but there probably is a parallel. The concept of keeping things in their right place, making sure everybody was got what they needed from the candy counter and what they need from the law practice.
So you weren't a kid that was like going and eating the candy in the back room. You were really taking responsibility. It's the same thing you're feeling with building this law firm.
I was the kid taking the candy and eating it behind the counter. I still do that in the law firm. We have we have candy all over the place, and I'm eating it.
All right, we're going to have to visit the law firm and check that one out.
We have good candy.
Doug, what else are you thinking there?
Yeah, so you worked with your dad in the store. Your mom was a teacher, was not involved at all. But you have traits from both your parents, it appears to me. What did you get from your mother?
My mother was a teacher, and I also teach. I've been I teach at two different law schools. I'm an adjunct professor at two schools, and I teach a lot of courses for continuing education of lawyers. I teach in my community, in different community events. And so I think that's the piece that I took away from my mother, the academic and the desire to give back to the community through teaching.
Jen?
You had mentioned that your mom wasn't too thrilled with the store growing up. How did that have an effect on you, and how does it help you now?
My mother didn't appreciate that my father was a member of the merchant class. She was a daughter of immigrant parents and felt that we needed to progress beyond being merchants. So there was tremendous tension between my mother and my father, and I think that that was formative in its own way, in that I was the mediator between my parents, trying to keep them from fighting all the time. And I do a lot of mediation in the law practice.
Ah, so your mom and dad's relationship prepared you for the practice of law, huh?
It definitely did.
Uh-huh. Doug, what else are you thinking?
Yeah, that's good. So that helped with mediation. You also seem to be like it's giving back. I guess your father being a merchant, was he pretty good with the customers as far as giving back to them wherever he could? Your mom taught you the same thing. Is that just really driven into you?
Yes. My father was very good with the customers. He's very much of a people person and very involved in the community. A lot of the people who shopped in the store from time to time couldn't afford what they needed to buy, and my father let them owe him money on account. He didn't really even keep notes of a lot of the money that was owed to him, and people would come in out of the blue and just drop a $20 bill on the counter because they owed money. And so and my father was a very big participant in various charities in the community.
You remember this as a child?
Absolutely.
How did you think your father was cuckoo? Do you think he was crazy? How were you feeling about that?
My father probably was cuckoo and probably was crazy, but he was loved by the community. People shopped in the store because they loved my father. They loved coming in. They loved talking with him, sharing the stories, talking about politics. My father was a big jokester, told jokes to everybody, and he was loved by the community.
How's all that
shopped in the store?
How's all that affecting you nowadays?
It's a good question. I think I like to feel the same way that he felt in the store. I like the clients to feel very good about me and our law firm and the kind of things we do for them. And probably that's a derivative of that experience watching my father.
Have you ever had a client that couldn't necessarily pay the bill?
We have way too many of those.
And what do you do in those instances?
You know, if a client is making an effort to pay a bill, whether it's $5 here or $10 there, I'm happy with that. We don't charge interest. We work with our clients.
So you're all about heart.
There's a lot of heart in our practice.
Doug?
That sort of really helped you as far as going forward with all of your client and I guess your staff relations as well.
Oh, I've got a question I'd like to interrupt. There was a you mentioned, we were talking earlier, and you mentioned that we thought you had a really deep sensitivity toward people. And we asked you, how young were you when that sensitivity toward people began to show up? You mentioned something that happened in fifth grade. What was that?
Yeah, we had a new, where we grew up in West Philadelphia, it was a very close-knit community. And when somebody new would come into the community, they had to really prove themselves. They were shunned at the beginning. So I remember a new kid moved in the neighborhood. People didn't really pay much attention to him, didn't like him. And I took him under my wing, showed him how to get on the bus and off the school bus, where to go in the school. And I introduced him to all my friends and tried to get him to play on the various teams that I was playing on. And eventually, he started to feel good about himself and his place in the community.
Well, why would you do that? Wouldn't you be risking your own neck by bringing somebody different in?
There's some truth to that. It wasn't. There were points of doing that were not comfortable. At one point, he actually got very upset with me and felt that I was being a little bit too paternal. And we got into somewhat of a fist fight over that.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it was a little risky, but I felt good doing it.
Felt good doing what?
Helping him incorporate himself into our close-knit community.
Wow, even though he was uncomfortable with it, perhaps.
Yeah, he had his own baggage, and part of that baggage was he didn't want to be shown around all the time. He didn't want to be...
But you really took him under your wing. How's that expressing itself in terms of your building this law practice?
I think everybody that comes to work for our firm, I feel the same way about. I want them to feel close to each other. I want them to feel part of the firm family. I want them to feel that they're treated on an egalitarian level and that everybody is of tremendous value to the law firm and from day one. Should feel part
so
of
it's
the
not
operation.
Just you know you're not just having a once a year Christmas party, but really it sounds to me like that's really the way you're treating everybody.
Yeah, every day is a Christmas party. Every day we try to get along with each other. We have a Friday lunch where the firm pulls everybody together, the lawyers, the support staff. The firm buys lunch for everybody.
Yeah.
And we sit and we talk about movies we've seen and what we're going to do over the weekend and what's going on with our
kids.
Why
did you tell me that at the beginning of the interview? That would have really helped us understand who you are. What's the website address?
You mean that I eat a lot?
No, that you really have a camaraderie amongst the team. What's the website address of this law firm?
It's BregmanLaw.com.
Let me have that one more time.
BregmanLaw.com.
Excellent. We've been speaking with Doug Bregman, president of Bregman, Berbere, Schwartz, and Gilday here on Executive Leaders Radio. Back in a moment right after this business spotlight. Excellent. Want help building your business with help from this show's CEOs? Our CEOs can help you uncover more opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. And some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. The same CEOs you've heard on the show for 10 years may be willing to help you build your business, uncover new opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. Some of the CEOs who have appeared on our shows over the last 10 years may be willing to help you grow, assuming you're serious about your success, serious about your own success, because it all starts with the leader. If you're serious about creating your own successful business, are truly committed to putting your nose to the grindstone and doing whatever it takes to make your business successful, we may be able to match you with successful CEOs who have created millions of jobs and earned millions of dollars to help you create your success. We've established unique relationships with a unique universe of over 7,000 CEOs who have created substantial wealth for their companies, their teams, and themselves. These women and men get the build in their blood and often continue to start and build businesses even after they've created substantial wealth for themselves because they love the challenge of building a business. Perhaps we can present you and your business to some of these CEOs to gain their interest in helping you. Now email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com to hopefully match you with some of the CEOs we've had on the show for the last 10 years. mentors@executiveleadersradio.com.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
If you're struggling to pay or haven't been making your student loan payments, listen carefully to this urgent alert. Have you been out of school for 10 or more years and you're still making your student loan payments? Are your student loans past due or even in default? Can't go back to school because of an old student loan problem? Fast Track Student Loans can get your student loans out of default, stop any wage garnishments, stop collection calls, and stop seizure of your tax refund. Give yourself a break. Stop the stress and get your student loan payments down to as little as $25 a month based on what you can afford to pay. One quick 10-minute call could help you solve your student loan problems. So call right now. Not available in all states. Payments may vary based on income.
800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. That's 800-685-0129.
I owed the IRS $10,000.
The IRS garnished my wages.
They put a lien on my house.
The IRS is the most powerful collection agency in the world. They do not give up until you pay.
I couldn't sleep. We were being audited. I called Tax Solutions Now, and a great big weight was lifted off my shoulders.
I called Tax Solutions Now, and they got the IRS off my back.
Tax Solutions Now had my wage garnishment lifted in 48 hours.
Tax Solutions Now can get you help. Our agents know the rules, can stop the pain, and get you the best deal. We connect you with a team of former IRS agents and tax professionals who will get the IRS off your back.
We saved our home and overcame the most powerful collection agency in the world.
Call Tax Solutions Now. Time is running out.
Call 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Joan Bialik, who's CEO and founder of Bialik Environments. Joan, what is Bialik Environments? What are you guys doing?
We're a contract furniture dealer, primarily representing Herman Miller, and we also do prefabricated interior construction representing Dirt.
All right. How large or how small is the organization?
We have 54 employees and about as many subcontractors.
Interesting. And where are you from originally?
I was born in Washington, D.C.
And how many brothers and sisters?
Two brothers.
Where are you in the pecking order?
Sandwiched right in the middle.
So what did that do to you, being sandwiched between two brothers growing up in Washington?
I learned survival skills, basically.
All right. And how young were you when you started making money?
My father put me to work when I was 8 years old, and he was...
What kind of business was he in?
He had a very entrepreneurial pharmacy business. And
so he was in the pharmacy business.
Yes.
And what were you doing at 8 years old?
So I was actually stamping out generic drugs.
So you were helping your dad stamp out generic drugs at the age of 8. And what else did you do in his store? What else did you do there?
Well, through the years, I waited on patients and typed out labels and helped him wherever I could.
So what did doing all these jobs in a pharmacy, what's that have to do with building this organization known as Bialik Environments?
Well, I first started my career by working with my father.
Mm-hmm, yep. And
in his pharmacies, and also he had a large medical supply distributorship.
Interesting. Justin, didn't you have a question earlier?
Joan, Yolanda spoke earlier about the importance of legacy. If your father were alive today, what would he say about your ability to pivot the business and to keep the legacy of the Bialik name alive?
Well, I think it's very important to him, and the reason that we call ourselves Bialik Environments is that the first company was Bialik Medical Arts Supplies and Medical Arts Pharmacy.
Yeah, keep going.
So I think he would be very proud. He was extraordinarily entrepreneurial, and I think would be very proud of the fact that we're
still alive. So this business started as a pharmacy, and it's evolved over the course. You've evolved it over the course of time.
Correct.
Huh.
So I sold the family business in the mid-90s, but in the as soon as he retired and I bought him out in 91, we were contacted by Herman Miller, who asked if we'd be interested in representing them in their healthcare environment.
Uh-huh, interesting. So you've really evolved this thing. I didn't realize it. I thought many times you start a business and it ends up the same way you started it, but I'm learning it doesn't happen that way.
This is a completely different business. As a matter of fact, I was very excited to be able to work in the field of design and furniture and no longer sell cotton balls and Band-Aids.
All right, Rich.
The healthcare industry has certainly changed over time during your career. How does that help you now? pivot and so forth?
Well, whenever there's change, there's always opportunity for us. And then, of course, we segued into government and into the commercial market as well.
Change is scary and frightening. It sounds like you embrace change. Tanya?
You told us earlier your parents got divorced when you were 8 years old. How did that affect you growing up?
Really good question. I was going to make sure that their divorce didn't define me. And I think I've proven that.
What do you mean? What do you mean you weren't going to let it define you?
Well, you know, back in the 50s, not too many people got divorced. And mm-hmm. so we were looked at a little differently. And I wanted to make sure that there was normalcy. And I developed a...
So does that mean that you really value long-term relationships? Relationships aren't transactions?
Great question. Great question. In my company, we have people that have been with me more than 30 years, 26, 23, 20, 17, on and on. And it's extremely important to me.
What's extremely important
It's extremely
to you?
Important to me. I mean, none of our teammates have to be there. They want to be there. And it's my responsibility to provide an environment that makes them feel comfortable.
Well, you are really sensitive to relationships because
Big
of what
time.
Happened with mom and dad. It's all about, didn't you mention you're part of a CEO group where you've been with the same folks for 30 years or something like
yes,
that?
Yes, yes, the Young President's Organization. I'm no longer a Y because I'm not young.
Uh-huh.
But we're still part of it. We're YPO Gold, and yes, I've been in this group
for
over 30 years.
Because many times the CEOs move around to different groups, but you've really stuck with the relationships over an extended period. Jen?
It seems like you've been a real trailblazer for mm-hmm. women, mm-hmm. Especially working and having children. Mm-hmm. How did you do it when you first started?
That was probably the most challenging, difficult decision I've ever made, to go back to work with young children, because I didn't I didn't know anyone else who was doing that. But I just always felt that I needed to do something that was creative and entrepreneurial. And it's interesting. My daughter once said to me, please don't stop working because then I can't tell my friends that you're a boss.
Brian.
You told us earlier that your two brothers went into medicine, mm-hmm. and your father was a pharmacist, mm-hmm. and I think you said your uncle was a pharmacist, too, if
yes.
I'm not mistaken.
He was in business with us, yeah.
And you were in the business. Did you ever have a drive, or were you ever any under pressure to go into the medical sciences in some manner at some point in your career?
No, I'm married to a doctor, and
that
was enough. Right, exactly. And neither of my children have chosen medicine either, by the way.
Bill?
Joan, your dad was obviously a big influence on mm-hmm. you early in your career, but I think you told us he was always also a bit old-fashioned as it related to gender roles. When did he start believing in you as a real businesswoman?
Well, I think he first expected that either of my two brothers would have gone into business, and then when they didn't, I was his last resort. And I think I had to prove myself. I was always proving myself, actually, to my dad. And when he saw that I was capable of handling things, and we also developed some new entrepreneurial activities within the business, I think he realized that it was in good hands.
So your nature is to keep evolving things. Your nature is to keep changing things.
Correct. And interestingly, my son is now in business with me, and he sees me as an advisor with that role.
What do you mean?
Well, we are not going to stay static. It's very important to both of us that we grow this business, and we're looking for interesting, challenging ways to do that.
What's the website address of this organization known as Bialik Environments?
Bialik.com, and it's spelled B-I-A-L-E-K.
Let me have that one more time.
B-I-A-L-E-K.
.com. Bialik.com. Excellent. We've been speaking with Joan Bialik, CEO and founder of Bialik Environments. Les, can you give us a rundown on who we've had the opportunity of speaking with today?
Sure. We have Nalima Grover, owner-founder of the QED Group, LLC, Yolanda Cole, senior principal, Hickok Cole Architects, Michelle Bolo, CEO, NT Concepts, and Joan Bialik, CEO and founder of Bialik Environments.
I'd like to thank my co-host, Mr. Les Molin Vistage, Justin Lang Cressa, Brian Chandler Petruri Law, Jennifer Wappas, Pignato Karp, Rich Stang DeLeon and Stang, Tanya Lederman, Blue Tree Digital, and Bill Rosello from Greenhouse Consulting for giving me a hand structuring the questions he'll be providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. It's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. Thank you for joining us today, and do have a nice day. Bye-bye. We nailed it.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. Biz Talk Radio.